Alex Wolf.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for being here, man.
Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, I'm stoked. So stoked. I don't remember how I first got connected with you. I think it was through the gatherings that we have at Luke's house.
Yes.
Right?
Am yes. I correct?
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. I think I was following you before that. You might have been following me, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I've been following you for a while. Big fan of what you do and what you stand for. And, you know, love becoming your friend and brother, and happy to be here today. So
yeah, thank you. Thanks, bro. Likewise. So let's start with just an introduction of you, your background, interesting things we'll get into related to that. Mm-hmm. Maybe touch on it at the beginning and then refer back to it later in the episode. But
sure.
Yeah, let's start there.
Sure. Yeah. For those that don't know me, my name's Alex Wolf. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've launched, created, brought to the world several companies, all with the intention to make an impact. Some were pretty successful, some weren't so successful, but learned a lot along the way and, you know, brought me to where I'm at now, working with mushrooms and psychedelics and biotechnology, all to make an impact for mental health. That's what I'm here for. Prior to that, I was a pilot for many years. Now it's all really just about making an impact and using mushrooms and biotechnology and nature's technology to do that.
Awesome. And I want to get into biotech because I know that can be like a buzzword that scares a lot of people, mm-hmm. especially with what's gone on over the last 5 years. But I want to hear your take on what biotech actually means, because I know it's a pretty broad term.
Sure.
And it can be, you know, a term that is attached to some nefarious things, but
true.
It doesn't necessarily have to mean that as well. So we'll get into that in a little bit. But yeah. I want to start with your pilot background, because I know mm-hmm. there's actually a pretty interesting story there. And it's actually somewhat of a perfect segue into mental health, into perpetual anxiety and fear and things like that. So you were like deathly afraid of flying, right?
Yeah.
Afraid of heights, rather.
Heights and flying, yeah.
To the point that you would barely go on bridges, or you would avoid bridges.
Yeah, it'd be like a panic attack scenario, driving over a bridge. If I was in the car with my parents, wouldn't go on any, you know, roller coasters or amusement park rides when my friends were going on them. It was a whole thing. I had a deathly fear of heights growing up. I think I fell off a balcony or something when I was really young, and that was the trauma. And it definitely limited me throughout my whole childhood and teenage years.
Mm.
Yeah, until, you know, my parents kind of manipulated me into taking a flying lesson at the local airport.
How did that go?
Well, they're like, we're going to introduce you to somebody. So I said, okay. They drove me to the airport. They introduced me to this guy named Bill Houston.
Did you know you were at the airport?
Like, I've never been to like a municipal airport before.
Like a regional one type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't really know what it was when I was getting there. And he's like, oh, hey, Alex, I'll give you a tour of the airport. So I'm like, okay. And, you know, he's like, oh, I'll show you the airplane. Okay, cool. And then he's like, oh, we're going to taxi over there. Okay. You know, now this is, you know, the fear is kind of building. I'm starting to get a little suspicious, but at the same time, it's cool. It's novel. Never been in a small airplane before. And then I hear him say on the radio, okay, you're cleared for takeoff. You had the tower say that to him. And I'm like, oh boy, here we go. And then literally starts taking off. And as we're taking off, he says, okay, you have control of the airplane. And it was literally in that moment that I had to take control of the airplane.
Wow.
And in that moment, it was literally a shift from being afraid I'd really didn't have the choice to be afraid. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't, but I chose to just take control of the airplane. And now I'm flying it. I'm pulling back on the yoke and I'm flying over my hometown. And it was just a gigantic shift in consciousness. And, you know, make a long story short, I realized that the fear that I carried throughout that my whole life was essentially an illusion. It was something that I created for myself for whatever reason. And I got to overcome that, and I became obsessed with flying. You know, I went back the next day, flew again. And the next day after that, I was a licensed pilot by 18 years old. I was a commercially licensed pilot by 20 years old. I was teaching the military by 24 years old. So I became like, I was obsessed with aviation and flying, and it propelled my career for many years. So it was pretty cool.
How did that change your approach to fear in general?
Yeah. Like I said, I realized that fear was an illusion.
Yeah. And like very palpable feeling of fear is an illusion.
Exactly.
Because you were literally forced to face it. Like, hey, you have control.
Yeah. I was forced to face it. Exactly.
What a metaphor though, too.
Totally.
Yeah.
And because of that, from that point on, for many, many years, I laughed at fear because I was like, I know that feeling. I know that thought pattern. I had it for so long. I was very familiar with it because of the heights thing. And I would laugh at the face of fear, and I would push myself in all kinds of scenarios, especially in the airplane,
yeah.
which always, to be fair, wasn't always the most responsible thing to do, like through certain weather patterns and this kind of stuff. But I became an amazing pilot, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I was really, really good at flying airplanes. It was one skill that I'd really developed, and I didn't have that fear in any case scenario, whether it became, you know, speaking on stage or anything that would usually bring up fear, you know, approaching a beautiful woman, whatever the case, it was just the fear was gone. It was like, yeah, I know that feeling. It's fake. And I move into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. 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 What an incredible teacher that was. It was. So you were probably in that moment pretty pissed at your parents, but now do you look back like, wow, thank you, mom and dad.
Totally. I thank them still to this day, you know, and they didn't know how it was going to go. But they'd seen enough where it was like, okay, like you got to face this thing. And
yeah.
And for whatever reason, they had an intuition that I would love being a pilot. And I did. It was a huge, huge part of my life for a long time.
Awesome. Do you still fly now?
I haven't flown in about a year and a half.
Okay.
Recreationally, it was just for fun. But I miss it, and I'll probably get back into it again. Now I do a lot of flying. Psychonautic.
Yeah, you do a different type of flying now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you go from being a pilot to a serial entrepreneur that's interested in natural health, consciousness, and things like this?
Yeah. So I was piloting for a long time. Very left brain, very organized, checklists, logic, you know, always trying to think ahead. Because in the airplane, you got to be ahead of the airplane or you get behind the airplane and then it's a mess. So I was very much a left brain thinker, and something was calling me to dive into plant medicine. You know, I started hearing things about ayahuasca and this kind of stuff, and there was a calling there. And my, you know, old best friend and business partner also got the call, and one day he's like, man, I think we should go to Peru. And I was like, it's really funny you said that. I had a dream about Peru the other day.
Wow.
And that was like on a Friday. By Monday, we were in Peru. We just went for it. And we found this guide. He brought us into the mountains of Sacred Valley of Peru. And we sat with ayahuasca. You know, we did the whole thing, the sweat lodge and the ceremonies and all this kind of stuff. And that was like the catalyst that it just literally showed me a whole other way of looking at the world and a whole other way of thinking, of being. And that was the shift. And I was like, wow, okay. And in the ayahuasca ceremony, they told me, you know, you could bring plant medicines to the world if you choose to. And it was like, wow, I never thought of that before. I was literally just a pilot. But I got that message from the plants. And that was in 2016. By 2018, I had co-founded and launched what turned out to be one of the largest cannabis companies in the world. So it was really just following that code, you know? And it took me through all kinds of adventures and, you know, people and places and situations, and it was awesome. So yeah, it was really getting the call from the plants, which sounds, you know, however it sounds to people, but that's how it happened.
No, that's amazing. Did you, let me put it this way. When you did that first ayahuasca ceremony and traveled to do that, you said you felt this calling, and that can mean a lot of things. So I'd love to hear what that means from your perspective, because there are a lot of people who approach, let's just say, plant medicines or animal medicines in general as, I want to learn more about myself. Mm-hmm. That's the intention they're coming from. And this is a very general statement. There's intentions across the board. Mm-hmm. But then I would say the other end of that spectrum, you could say, is like, I'm broken, I'm screwed, and I need this. And I think that can almost, in some cases, and I don't claim to be an expert, but this is having conversations with quite a few people who are medicine men, medicine women, I would say that can be somewhat dangerous, to where you're looking at this as a way to escape or as a replacement for doing the work, rather than, this is a tool for more introspection, deeper connection, and maybe I am dealing with some trauma, some anxiety, some suicidality or something like this, but I'm approaching this as something to help me either zoom out or go deeper to help me see the work that does need to be done. Mm-hmm. Not a replacement for doing the work, but helping me to see the work that does need to be done. So what was mm-hmm. the specifics of the intention that you approached ayahuasca with?
Yeah, great question.
Would you disagree with anything?
No,
I just
that's
said there?
Great. I do want to echo that I see these plants and mushrooms, these medicines as really tools and technologies.
Yeah.
To symbiotically improve our human experience and raise our level of consciousness.
Yeah.
That's what I believe they're here for. You know, it's tools and technologies. For me at the time, there was like I said, a calling. What does that mean? There was like this voice, a different voice, you know, and it was like, okay, I hear the voice in my head that's usually the doer. You know, I was being led by that voice probably my whole life up until that point, mm-hmm. you know, like got to do this, got to right. do the checklist, blah, blah, blah. This was a different kind of voice. This was like Peru, deeper. Like, you know, like this call visions of Peru. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? It was really like, call it intuition.
Yeah.
More of an intuitive thing. And it, all of a sudden I'm getting dreams about Peru. I'd never even been there. And I'm like, wow, this is fascinating. And it was so cool because, like I said, we had this talk on a Friday, but Monday we were in Peru. And like some people take months to plan a trip to Peru. Like, and when we went there, we saw so much of the country in about 2 weeks. Like we went from Lima to Machu Picchu, Sacred Valley, Lake Titicaca, Cusco, all these places in 2 weeks, which for people that know, it's like very wide range of the country.
Yeah.
And it was like a seamless trip. Like everything just clicked. From one magical experience to the other, it just flowed like we were meant to be there. And it was really like truly magical
mm-hmm.
in that yeah. sense.
And did you spend any time like connecting with the Kiro people while you were there?
I mean, we had guides and we had locals that were, you know, deep in the medicine work and this kind of stuff. You know, a shaman as well. But I don't know if they were actually Kiro people
yeah,
or not.
I don't know for sure. Like okay, yeah. cool. And so your experience of ayahuasca, your takeaway was you can bring this to the world. And it wasn't, was it necessarily referring specifically to ayahuasca or was it just saying the whole plant medicine space? How did you take it as?
It was plant medicine. And as I followed that instruction, it led me to cannabis being the path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. You know, at that time, cannabis wasn't legal in Canada or the United States, but just by following that with the intention that this is dharmatic, like this is going to help people. And in that time as well, my mom had, you know, early stage breast cancer. Her and her sister had it at the same time, actually. And you know, I convinced my mom to use cannabis oil as I was on this path with cannabis at the time. And thank God she listened to me. And her sister didn't. Her sister chose the chemo path and her sister ended up passing. And my mom ended up beating, you know, the cancer. It's the early stage one. So I guess that's stage four. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
Stage four is the late stage. So stage one would be the early stage.
Sorry about that. Stage one. Okay. So early stages, she ended up beating it. Sister didn't. And I was like, wow, there's really something medicinally powerful to this plant. And that really gave me a lot of inspiration. And like I said, it was like, it wasn't necessarily about me. It was like, oh, this is dharmatic, bringing these plants. And with that, things serendipitously happened. Like I said, we created a very large, successful company in a really short amount of time. We took it public, et cetera, et cetera. But it was really that was the code, Alec, was this is dharmatic. Like this is to help the greater good of all. Now, did the company continue on that dharmatic path? I don't think so, but you know, that's what happens sometimes when you build a company is things take different turns and different people get involved with different interests.
Such a fine line when you develop something great between keeping the intentionality behind it while also knowing that, okay, this is something that can help a lot of people. So we need to really get a lot of capital behind it. And then that brings a lot of different energies. It's such a balance, man.
It is.
I mean, you have experience in that more than maybe anyone I've interviewed though. So.
It's wild. It's like exactly said, it's energies, right? You bring people's energies and people have different drivers.
Yeah.
You know, some is to make money. Some is for their own selfish wants right. or needs, and some is like, no, it's really for the love of the plant. And you try to balance it all out. You try to build this team,
yeah,
you know, to go and win a championship, you know, so to speak. But it's just like any team, yeah. like different characters, different energies. It doesn't always gel. And, you know, how the company started for me was really all about the love of the plant.
Yeah.
And this can help people. And in that, and I'll admit, like, my own, you know, selfish wants got taken over. And the more that I actually indulged in the plant, the more that, you know, things went astray. And I got yeah. into a hedonistic lifestyle and all this kind of stuff. And the intentionality went away. And eventually it led me to the mushrooms, which got me clear again. And I got to look at this thing. And I was like, yeah, this doesn't have the ethos of how, you know, I originally saw this. Like, the, you know, when we went public, the ticker of the company was love, you know, like, mm-hmm. it was really all about the love. And by the end, for me, my own personal experience, I was like, there's no more love in this thing. It's, yeah. this is just completely corporate. So I walked away, and that was, the mushrooms were the catalyst for that.
Yeah, got it. What is your general opinion of cannabis now on the back end?
I mean,
obviously it helped your mom, right?
Yeah.
And I know several other people who've used it medicinally for those types of things that have had tremendous success.
Yeah.
But it also is something that can be tremendously abused and sort of used as a crutch in a way to escape and avoid facing, or maybe even perpetuate some of those bad, you know, bad behaviors, bad habits, et cetera.
Yeah, I agree. For me, it was that for sure. I agree. It can be used medicinally. It's a wonderful medicine when it's used for that. It can be do amazing things. You know, Rick Simpson oil has helped many people that I even know get through cancer and beat cancer and all this kind of stuff. So that's pretty huge. However, and I'll speak for myself, exactly like you said, I did end up using it for a crutch for several years to avoid facing certain uncomfortable feelings, avoid facing myself, just totally a disassociative thing. And what I got clear with after is, yeah, this plant, you know, having been around this plant, grew thousands and thousands of this plant, sold hundreds, you know, maybe thousands of kilos of this plant while this company was going on.
You know, it's so crazy. If you had said that 25 years ago,
I'd be in prison.
That's aired on public.
I know, it's wild.
It's just crazy to think about. Like even the word kilos, like, my mind immediately goes to, like, drug trafficking. So it's
wild to think, like, you know, 2 years prior, it's illegal. 2 years later, at that time frame, I'm celebrated for it.
Yeah.
And
there's people still locked up for doing the exact, even less than that.
Oh, fractions of it.
Fractions of that.
It's insane.
It's crazy to me.
But yeah, selling, yeah. It was really cool to sell thousands of kilos of cannabis.
Yeah.
So it was a fun, I was like, wow, this Matrix world is wild. Like,
I can't help but laugh when you say that phrase right there.
It was a funny job to think that was my job, you know,
yeah.
Like, how many kilos do you want? Okay, great. We're sending it over.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
It's wild.
Yeah.
And selling it to the government. In Canada, you're selling it to the government. The
wow.
government controls the distribution.
What the hell, bro?
It's wild.
That is insane. That is crazy. So, okay. So you realize that all of these conflicting energies, and then also your use of cannabis, was not intentional. The company had sort of lost some of that initial essence and spark that you had, which stemmed from this ayahuasca journey that you did.
Yeah.
Which is really incredible.
Yeah.
So it's taking you, you could say that the energy of the plants, the energy of the plants of the earth, the medicinal mm-hmm. plants, is still taking you on this ride in a way. It's still yeah. lingering in the back of your mind. So you transition into mushrooms.
Yeah.
Before we go there, though, I want to ask about just your opinions on, because this will apply to both, and this I think is a good transition point, what legalization of something does for better and for worse, right? Because obviously, I think you and I are both of the same shared mindset that the fact that these are illegal in the first place, any of these substances, is absolutely insane, especially those that come from the earth,
yeah,
that are provided by Pachamama, if you want to call it that, or God himself, right?
Yeah.
I just think it's absolutely insane that any of these things are illegal. Now, with that being said, because we live in a hyper-capitalistic, corporatized world, the moment that something goes from being illegal to legal, for better and for worse, there's going to be people that see this as a money-making opportunity, and it explodes the industry. And then, of course, nefarious actors who want to infuse energy surrounding, you know, some more MK Ultra-esque mind control things start entering into the space. But then you have some people that are really, really trying to grasp on and cling to the intentionality. In the case of cannabis, like my buddy Ryan Sprague would be a perfect example of that. Yeah. Someone's like, no, no, no. Like, this is what cannabis is supposed to be, right? And he's using biodynamic farming, like Korean natural farming principles. Incredible, right?
Yeah.
So much intention going into his. Completely blows any of the, you go to your, you know, weed shop, in any random weed shop in California, like obviously complete difference there. But
yes,
yeah, just I want to hear your take on legalization.
Yeah, it's a great topic, and you're hitting some major points there. And I saw this with cannabis. Once they legalize cannabis, yeah, it's a great thing. People should be allowed to indulge and experiment with cannabis. It's a plant, for sure. However, what happened with that industry is, like you said, a lot of bad actors, a lot of people with not the best intentions, greed, you know, corporate mindset came in, and they almost pretty much destroyed the industry, you know, to a certain extent. Like, there was tons of companies that came out, all competing against each other. It was became a race to zero. The plant value just got lower and lower and lower, to the point where, you know, a lot of people lost their jobs, a lot of companies had to go under, and now they're probably down to around, you know, 30 big companies, and even these companies are conglomerating, which is fine. That's capitalism. That's the business. It is what it is. But however, what happened, I'd like to touch on, like, what happened to the plant while all this is going on? Like, and yes, Ryan, great guy. I've heard wonderful things about him from so many people in our community. And I do believe he has integrity, and he has an amazing relationship with the plant.
And I've experienced his, and that's what's amazing, like in a very, very intentional way, doing the Breathe with Cannabis ceremony. I've done that twice myself, and it's like, this is a totally different experience than like just getting high and watching some funny movie, which can also be awesome in some cases, but you know, you get what I'm saying, right?
I get what you're saying, and intentionality is a big, big part of it.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, call it 50% of it. It's huge. The other big part of it is the essence of the plant.
Yeah.
Like, the essence of this plant, like you said, Alec, was, you know, it had an intention from the creator why it was here. And this plant used to grow freely, and it would do its own thing. And that plant has been drastically changed and genetically modified from the times where our parents used to, you know, smoke weed and drive around in their Camaros. Like, it's been extremely genetically modified to raise the THC levels. And in doing so, it's, the plant is not the same. The essence is not the same. And this is a female plant, right? This is a female plant that they're gathered and put in rooms, and they compete against each other to grow the biggest, brightest flowers, the buds, so that they can attract the male and repopulate. This never happens, right? They're just consistently trying to compete with each other. This female energy that's competing and competing, sexually frustrated energy, never gets the male. They're chopped, you know, all this kind of stuff. So picture this as a plant, like it's a sentient being, right?
Right,
and it just never gets the mate, never gets to have a family in it, its essence. And it's just consistently being genetically modified to raise its, to raise this temptress energy. So, you know, once you really get into the essence of the plant, you find that this feminine energy, which had divine intentions from the creator, has been drastically taken, you know, down another path. And now it's, in my opinion, it's a woman scorn. And so what happens when you ingest this feminine energy of a woman scorn, it's like, oh, well, now it gets to take a ride in your vessel with your soul. And, you know, a lot of people don't think about that. They just light it up or whatever, take the gummy. But no, it's like this essence now gets to take a ride in your vessel.
Right.
And what does it do? Typically, you know, my experience, and a lot of people I think would agree with this, is it gives you these illusions of like, oh, you could do this, and maybe you could do this. And it takes your mind down a different path of maybe some things you wouldn't thought about. Good, bad, left, right, who knows? But most of these things never end up coming true. Mm-hmm. It's just these delusions that people are fed.
Yeah.
And then eventually what she does, I would say, with all humility, is she ends up taking more than she gives you. She takes back because she's been taken away from for so many years now. So it's karma for this plant. And you know what ayahuasca showed me, who's a master plant, is you know, she's not really vibing with cannabis and where her essence is at these days. She's really a woman scorn, a feminine energy that's scorn. And, you know, a woman scorn is a really tough energy to deal with.
Yeah,
so, so that's where I landed with cannabis. And I love Ryan, you know, that he's has this intentionality and he's doing things the right way and bringing back what the true essence of the plant is. Yes, the plant needs stewards like that.
Yeah. He's a needle in a haystack, though.
He's a needle in a haystack. He's the exception to the rule.
Really?
So I'm just very cautious when it comes to cannabis these days because I know what she's all about. And I went down that path.
Right.
Like, I'm speaking from true experience. Like, I used to roll around with a half a pound in my backpack and roll up joints for everybody. Like, I was deeply, had a deep relationship with cannabis, you know, until I realized, like, she just continues to take more and more light than she actually gives.
No, I could totally see that, man. That resonates a lot. Like, aside from the ceremonies I've done with Ryan, I haven't smoked weed in like a long time. Like, maybe here and there when I'm at places and gatherings, because it can be a very social thing, but I'm making sure that they have something.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's in that? Is that organic? Like, is this going to like blast me off? Is this sativa? And like asking all the qualifying questions, right?
Yeah.
The other thing, in addition to this natural energy, and that totally makes sense, this like scornful energy that is a natural response to this plant being used and abused, is also the energy of the people who are growing it for corporate profit.
It's all for money.
Like, all of that is being infused into the plant too.
Yeah.
And it's just such a manipulation of what was intended. And
yeah,
this also applies to the supplement space, which I'm sure we'll get into quite a bit. But I think that it would behoove of people to be very, very mindful of that when it comes to anything in their life. Like, what, aside from the chemical properties of which the cannabis space is, like, I mean, half of them are sprayed with glyphosate and that's what you're smoking. Like, that's absurd. But then also the metaphysical properties, like, what is being imprinted upon this thing that I'm then ingesting or inhaling or whatever it is. Like, you really, really have to think about that stuff. And most people don't have any concept, but it matters. I mean, I always go back to this. I don't know how, with man's equipment, we even figured out what the full electromagnetic spectrum is. I even question that, but assuming that they know what the full electromagnetic spectrum is, they've come to understand that man can only see 0.0035% of it, right?
Yeah,
and so that means there are 99 point whatever percent floating all around us, in, you know, imbuing and wrapping itself around each of these things, like us when it comes to the human biofield. But the point is, we're interacting with all those metaphysical things.
Yeah.
The electromagnetism of substances absolutely matters. What energy has been imprinted on it? Refer back to Veda Austin's work, Gerald Pollack's work, all these people. It matters. It matters tremendously. And that's what's happening when you're consuming this form of cannabis. And that's why I personally, same as you, I avoid it at all costs.
Yeah.
And it's sad because I'm sure this plant does, in its natural form, have some incredible properties.
Yeah, well said. Well said. And a lot of people don't think about that, but every product out there, every, especially these big corporations, like, there is an energy that is going into this, their product. You know, the Peruvian shamans call this the Shanti. And the Shanti is like, yeah, what's their prayer that they're praying over this stuff? Like, what do they want this product to do? Like, they do it with their sacred medicines, the ayahuasca and stuff like that. But they're like, yeah, no, Coca-Cola has one and all these, you know, General Mills and all, they have their own thing too. Like, whether you realize it or not, like, they have their own prayer, their own ethos. And it's exactly like you said, most of them is for greed and and money and this kind of stuff. And they don't, it's profit and they don't care what's going on, you know, to the human being. And the human being now has all these issues and diseases and things. And it's like, oh, I wonder where this is coming from. Well, you don't, you're not considering like the metaphysical thing that's actually going into these things.
Totally.
And I got to experience that with the cannabis thing. And that was like, I was a co-founder and it like, it got so big, you know, by the time I left, there was 500 employees there and it was so big, which was a dream come true to think that I, you know, helped create this from inception to like this giant corporation. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I lost total control of the ethos.
Yeah.
And I got to witness that. So I was like, okay, my next venture is like, we got to make sure like the ethos is there and we're doing the work, we're doing in the inner work. And that's my driver now for that exact point. And it's like, yeah, no, people really should get to know what is the ethos of everything that they're putting into, because it is real.
Amen, man. So well said. And I'm sure now with your approach with Eons, and we still have to get into that,
yeah,
you've completely shifted like who you have involved, like how embodied they are, for lack of a better term, how self-aware they are, how grounded they are, how much work they've done on themselves before you will let them enter into what Eons is.
Yeah. Starting with myself, like Eons, you know, I'm good at coming up with ideas and I'm good at executing them. But Eons really took me on like in a emotional and inner obstacle course to like work on myself. Like it's who I became too, to like, I had all these ideas of bringing, you know, mushrooms to the world and psychedelics to the world and all this kind of stuff. I thought, you know, I love psychonauting. I love journeying. I love expanding my consciousness. That's what really one of my biggest driver is. And I had all these great ideas, but the mushrooms were like, no, 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 you're not ready yet. Like, take a seat, buddy. Like, and they put me through the ringer. Like, I've changed so much through the course of this company because, like, they just continue to, like, show me my own shit. And, like, I have to work through them because, honestly, like until I do, like things don't even manifest into the world. Like I had the idea for our legal psychedelic microdose 2 years ago where I was like, oh my God, this is an amazing idea. And yes, my intention is to help people. Like that's really what it's for. But literally the mushrooms have their own plan and they are the organic intelligence, you know, as we dive into this modern world, which is in my opinion, like an artificial evolution, the way that science and technology is just multiplying so fast.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, so yeah, as we dive into the artificial intelligence, which has its, you know, some part of it's cool. I get that. It's, you know, there's some cool technologies.
Totally.
But I'm just leaning more into the organic intelligence of the mushrooms, you know, of the mycelium, and they are my teachers.
Mm.
Like they're showing me the way. And I just continue to do the inner work as my main priority, period. Mm-hmm. Like I wake up and I do the inner work before I do anything else to make sure that I don't have these blockages or, you know, weird drivers that I used to have, you know, money, notoriety, all these things,
all
like
the things,
to make sure that they don't get in the way of what the mushrooms actually want. So it's been a spiritual journey. To say the least. Yeah.
I resonate with that so much, especially when it comes to the way forward and what we're trying to build with our platform. Like everything you said there, it's taken me on a ride too. I totally get it, man.
Yeah.
Like if you really want to build something great that is transformative and is infused with the energy of something that represents as best as you can, God, source, creator, whatever you want to call it, like you better be damn sure you're willing to do the work.
Yeah.
Like, and really address some of the deepest things about yourself that you were unwilling to face before. You better be damn sure that you're going to do that. Otherwise, it's never going to come to fruition, man.
It won't come to fruition.
So, like, especially if you want to put that much intention into something, like, it's easy to go and make something for the sake of, like, just making money or for the sake of progress, so to speak. But, like, if you really want to put something out with intention to change the world, you better be sure that you are embodying that intention on a consistent basis, which requires that you do the work.
Amen, brother. Yeah. Absolutely. That's the mission right there.
Yeah. So I want to transition into now talking about Eons, because, you know, you already brought it up and I think it's just a perfect segue after having talked about cannabis and your journey there. So how did the idea for Eons come about?
Eons came about through my own struggles as well. I was dealing with at that point, you know, I'd made a bunch of money, I had the exit and all this kind of stuff. And I'd gotten off my conscious path and I'd ended up on this hedonistic lifestyle. You know, it was the first time of climbing that mountain that every entrepreneur dreams of climbing.
Yeah.
And you realize like, wow, this isn't the mountain that you really want to be climbing. You know, you'll never end up fulfilled. You know, it was the demiurge, you know, and I got to realize that. And I guess I had to realize that, you know, I had to get to that. And I was like, okay, there's got to be more than this, you know? Yeah. And now I was like, okay, well, how did I start these things? It was like, it wasn't about me. It was about the Dharma. It was like how to make an impact in the world. So as I was going through my own loops of demiurges and all this kind of stuff, I realized, and I got on the mushrooms, thank God. First, I got put on a gut health protocol that cleared me up. got my vagus nerve cleared up. And then I dove deep into, you know, psilocybin, LSD, microdosing psilocybin as well. And these psychedelics really, you know, started bringing me back onto the path. And I was like, okay, this is the way forward. This is the, you know, this is the way that we're going to make a change, is raise people's consciousness responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the key thing. It was, I took things so far in my psychedelic journeys. And like I said earlier, I had the intentions. I had the idea. I was like, no, I'm going to bring all this psychedelic stuff to the world. And they were like, no, you're not. No, you're not. You're if you're ever good. And they humbled me, like they humbled the shit out of me and brought me like truly to my knees. And it was like, you work for us, buddy. Like, don't even, you know, and if you're going to do this, you're going to do this very responsibly. And that was a big code that I had to learn. And it was like, okay, everything I do, you know, bring to the world with Eons will be done responsibly.
Mm.
Microdosing for mental health, to literally to help bring people to mental health. And that was the mission. That was the idea, was to bring people to connect with themselves,
mm-hmm.
their big self, you know, that was really
the true self,
Exactly.
The one mind, God, creator.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was my own journey, where I was, you know, caught up in the little self, and the mushrooms and the psychedelics brought me to like, no, there's the big self here. It's mm-hmm. the collective self. And so that was like, okay, so how do we do that? That was the idea. How do we do that? Well, I knew in my previous experience, like, to really make an impact, to really get people to try things, you need an iconic brand. You need a brand that people can get behind, you know, a powerful name. So it was during the mushrooms that they showed me the name Eons. Eons is the longest period of time that exists. You know, there's decades, there's centuries, there's millennia, there's epochs, there's eras. And there's eons. It represents hundreds of millions of years. It's
eons is like essentially eternity, like
exactly
infinity.
It's the closest thing to infinity that there is. So, and mushrooms have been around since then. It's the oldest living organism. It's the largest living organism, like we talked about earlier, the mycelial network, which is like mother.
Yeah, we talked about that off camera. We got to revisit that too.
We got to bring that back.
That was good.
That was good. So good. You were onto that.
Yeah.
So that's like, we'll get back into that. And oldest, largest. And with the studies that are coming out, like, some people are saying it's the smartest. Like, you put the mycelial network into a situation and it figures out all the best ways to do it, you know, including like the subway systems in Japan. So anyway, oldest, largest, and smartest. So I was like, okay, well, if we're going to align with any technology to help people, bring them to mental health. And I truly believe people are just one thought away from mental health.
Mm.
How do we do that? Well, the mushrooms. Let's let them show people the way. So that was the inspiration between Eons, is like, okay, we want this thing to be big. We want to make an impact. Like, I've already had the exits. It's not about that. It's like, it's a legacy move. And that's where Eons came in. We wanted something to be big, iconic, to make an impact, help millions of lives, bring them to mental health. What does that mean, mental health? Well, it connects them with their true self. You know, people are stuck where I was stuck for a long time, in the left brain, you know, the conditioned mind. And the conditioned mind is great. You know, it taught me to fly airplanes. It's wonderful. Got me here today. Drove my truck here. Drove our nice trucks here. It's wonderful. But it's limited. You can only take it so far. And that's why people have midlife crises, all this kind of stuff, is because they take their left brain as far as it could go, and they get more and more disconnected from their true essence, the creator, nature, their soul. And I believe strongly that mushrooms can be the bridge back to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's something about our left brain tendency that is then wrapped in with the modern world that we have created, you know, and for better and for worse. Like, I'm very grateful for this studio.
It's dope.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And then I'm also like, damn, there's a lot of like blue light and artificial lights and dirty electricity and EMFs all over the place. So I limit my time here as much as I can. Aside from like when I'm recording an episode, I'm like, let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
But I think that this creation that humanity has made, which is incredible, it shows our imaginative skills. It shows that we can literally have a thought and then birth something into existence. Everything in this room started as that. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And it can be a slippery slope where we're creating things with so many different energies, so many different intentions. Some, you know, all of these were derived from natural sources originally, which I believe are imbued with the essence, the true essence of God, the natural rhythms, the natural circadian rhythms, the you know, the Schumann resonances imbued throughout all of nature. And like, that is the essence of God imbued within nature, and it's perfect, and it's cyclical and intelligent in its design. And then humanity, for better and for worse, I truly say that, for better and for worse, will take that and manipulate it for selfish gain in a lot of ways, manipulate it just for corporate profit, manipulate it, you know, maybe even if you're in a bad mood and you create something, it's going to infuse that energy into what you've created. So all that to say, this world we've created has, I think, the more that we spend time in it, away from nature, the more disconnected from God we are. And I don't want, maybe disconnected is the wrong word. It's more, the more fuzziness is on that connection, the more
distorted,
distorted, there's too many other voices and signals around you. And I think that mushrooms are unique, and maybe they're not so unique because this was originally what cannabis is. And I want to talk into talk about feeling the mental health crisis versus helping resolve the mental health crisis, because there's a fine line there when it comes to plant medicines. But I think that consuming these substances that are known to have, for lack of a better term, psychedelic properties is like a quick jump start back to, oh, this is coming from God. Like, God is out in nature. I mean, you hear so many people who do plant medicine journeys and then they're immediately tipped off to, I need to start approaching health from a natural way now.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's more to this than just this. Like, there's something bigger than me that I'm connecting to here.
Yeah.
It happens to so many people.
So many. Yeah. It's, I think it's really the shift. It helps create the shift. It's like the bridge from the left brain, conditioned brain, into the right mind, the divine mind, the creative mind, where the imagination is, where the intuition is. And I think this is really what it's all about. I think ancient texts talk about this, and we could get into that. But I think it's really that. It's the bridge over to our natural way of being. And yes, the conditioned mind has its role in all, in life. It's a great tool, but people get stuck there. And this, I believe it's time to just restore balance. Like you said, there's a distortion. There's too many, you know, like you said, there's a lot of noise.
Noise.
A lot of noise, man. A lot of distractions. And it's like, there's really only one signal that we need to pay attention to. And that's the signal to the creator. And I believe mushrooms really help attune you to that signal. And how do they do that? Well, they start bringing you out of your conditioned mind where there's a lot of noise. The mind is just like, has people on a leash, like, hey, do this, do this, do this, go get the coffee, go have the cigarette. Like, you don't even realize your people are doing it. They're just like on a leash to their conditioned mind. And this, I believe, you know, sometimes you take mushrooms, it's very uncomfortable. What is that uncomfortable feeling? Well, it's unleashing you from your conditioned mind. And now it's opening up to the right side of their mind, where a lot of really dialed in wise people talk about this. Ian McGilchrist and, you know, Marianne Williamson, with totally different ends of the spectrum, but really talking
Terrence McKenna.
Yeah. Like, it's going into Einstein. You know, Einstein said imagination is more important than science, more important than knowledge. Well, that's a pretty big indicator. You know, I'm not saying Einstein is the, you know, he's still one of the greatest minds ever. And he was tapped into the imagination, because the imagination is infinite. You could, it's a superpower. And I think that's where it's going back, Alec. And that's what I keep going back to. And that's what these psychedelics, you know, which can be a trigger word for some people hear the word psychedelic and they're like, that's tripping out with your buddies and all this kind of stuff. Psychedelic, the actual word just means soul revealing.
Wow. Didn't know that.
Yeah. It's revealing your soul. That's pretty cool.
That's like, really cool.
You know? So it's like, yeah, that there's, it doesn't have to be this hallucinogenic trip out situation. It's just like unraveling layers of yourself, the big self. And I believe, you know, especially where we're going with all this technology and modernity, it's time now to like really connect with yourself, your big self, and shift. And nature it's Mother Nature. It's the feminine energy that's divine that is going to help us do that. Like, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Beautiful. One question I do have on that, and I've thought a lot about this, like my experience of psilocybin, and I know we're going to be talking about a different substance here in a minute, but yeah. that's my primary gateway into the psychedelic realm, you could say.
Yeah.
My experience in some cases has been it's used very intentionally mm-hmm. and sometimes in a ceremony. Like Kylie and I did a psilocybin ceremony on our 8th wedding anniversary.
Awesome.
And it was incredible and incredibly challenging. Like talk yeah. about revealing your conditioned mind. It's also revealing your conditioned mind and all of the trauma,
yeah.
like many of which like, oh, I've already dealt with that. And it's like, damn, this shit comes roaring back and it yeah. slaps you in the face. And, but then at the end, it's very loving and it's like, mm-hmm. you are not that.
Mm-hmm.
Like here's what you believe about yourself. Here's why you believe it about yourself. Here's what you've done based on those beliefs. Here's what's been done to you to get you to those beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And you're none of them.
Mm-hmm.
You're none of them.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's times where I've used what is, you know, a very incredible substance. And I've just gone and like gone to a fucking music festival and just like trip balls.
Yeah.
And even done some bad things after that. Mm. You know what I mean? And
sure.
it's like, it can be used so intentionally. And it can be used so unintentionally.
Yeah.
What in your mind is the importance of using these things intentionally?
Yeah. Well, like you touched on earlier, it's a tool. So like if you have a job to do, you know, you're going to pick a certain tool to do it, right? Like anything. You got a screwdriver, you got a shovel, you got a hammer, you got a wrench. This is a specific tool. I believe psilocybin is a specific tool for showing you what you need to work on. When used in that case scenario, yeah, it could be a bit uncomfortable. It's like you're going to the dojo and you're like, okay, I'm ready to train here, sensei. And the sensei's like, okay, you're ready? Good. I respect that you're ready. And then they put you through their class. You know, if you've ever done martial arts, it's like, it can be uncomfortable. But at the end of the class, yeah, you're a better human for it. You're a better mm-hmm. man for it, right? And yeah, it's the sensei's class. And they respect that you showed up to that class. And at the end, you're going to get some lessons and it's going to show you things that you need to work on. You know, does that apply at a music festival? Not really. Like there's some, you can access different parts of yourself and like, yeah, it can be fun.
Like free dancing, like, yeah, of course.
Vibes, you know,
yeah,
like you're,
totally.
You're very vibrational, you're sensational, all these kind of things. But just remember, like this is a tool. So now
yeah.
you're. Like I would say there's a better psychedelic for the music festivals, you mm-hmm. know, and that's a different category, but psychedelics are a wide range of tools.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like pick your tool for the right task that yeah. you want to go with. And they're not all silver bullets. Like a screwdriver doesn't do the same thing as a wrench and vice versa. So yeah, that's what I would say. And psilocybin on a scientific level is working on the serotonin receptor. So it modulates depression and happiness. And in its essence, it can be pretty intrusive. Like it shows you what you need to see as opposed to what you want to experience. It doesn't really care what you want because it knows that your wants are from your limited conditioned mind. So it's like, I'm not here to play that game. I'll just show you what you need to learn.
Yeah.
And in my experience, it's like, there's no such thing as a bad trip because you'll get a lesson out of it.
Totally.
And lessons are how you grow.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. So back to you wanted to help, you know, with Eons, bring mushrooms into the space. And we're talking mushrooms of all types because you have several products, but I want to get to one specifically that we'll talk about. To help this sort of mental health crisis that we're dealing with right now, mm-hmm. which you and I are in agreement because we're so disconnected from nature and just perpetuating in that disconnection from nature, which also brings along with it these conditioned beliefs and then perpetuating trauma onto other people, onto our kids, and then our mm-hmm. kids grow up and then they have it. Like it's just this vicious cycle and then consuming all these unnatural substances. And the solution largely is to get back to nature.
Yeah.
But with that being said, when it comes to the plant medicine space, and I think the largest example of this I would say is with cannabis,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. But there are a lot of people who approach this, I'm going to use X substance because of my mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they don't have any mental health issues, but they're just like, hey, my friend said to try this, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And then it just creates a mental health issue or perpetuates a mental health issue. So what do you think, that's a big question, but what do you think is happening there with people who approach these substances and then ultimately have like a complete psychotic break afterwards in the most extreme, or just have perpetual anxiety afterwards?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like you said, a lot of people are suffering. They need some sort of tool to help them. You know, they maybe things are so tough that they can't do it on their own. Then there's other people that are just so, I would say, distracted by the noise that they don't even know why they're doing these things. Maybe a friend told them to do it. Maybe they're just like, oh, I just want to feel better, whatever that, like they're not clear.
Right.
They're not spending enough time getting clear with the why, why you're doing this. And if you're not clear with anything in life, well, you're going to get unclear results.
Totally.
And then that could just, you know, propel you down a path or a spiral that maybe your soul is like, hey, like you're not paying attention here.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, people got to just get clear with the why, like, why are you doing this? And then, like you said, you keep bringing it up. It's so key is like intention, in my opinion, is a real thing. Like,
dude, that's where my mind is going in that question the whole time is like, intention is everything.
Yeah.
Cause the tendency too, for people who come into like, oh, I'm just going to fucking use this to go party, or like, oh, I'm just going to do it with my friends. More often than not, I guarantee, whether it's psilocybin, some type of mushroom of that variety, or whether it's like LSD or whether it's like cannabis, it's going to be grown by someone like, dude, I just bought this from some random guy, or like my friend Fred who grows it in his backyard with a bunch of aluminum foil and shit. Like, you know what I mean? So like there, it's devoid of intention, or maybe the intention there is like, oh, just to allow this individual to escape.
Yep.
And that's completely different in terms of the energy going into the plant and then also the energy of which you're consuming it with. And like, I go back to that being everything. Mm-hmm. It's everything, man.
Yeah.
That is the most important piece. So I think when people are getting a product in the psychedelic space that they know is crafted with the utmost intention, care, reverence for the substance, and then they are coming in with the correct intention, whether it's, you know what, I'm struggling with a little bit of anxiety and I need to sort of zoom out, or I need to go deeper in myself, depending on the substance, or, you know what, I need some creative juice a little bit, you know, and I'm stuck in this like day to day. I'm doing all the things to connect with nature as best I can, given the modern lifestyle we live in. But I just need a little bit of a different vantage point here. Like, I think that's the right intention to approach these things. And I think if you're consuming it with someone who's creating it for that purpose too, it's a completely different ballgame. I'm speaking from experience because we both took, you know, a little bit, and it's 1 milligram of, we'll talk about that later.
Sure.
We'll talk about that later. But that's my experience of it, man. Cause I know you. I know the intention that you put into something. It's even cooler hearing you went from that sort of corporate mentality to now like, okay, that was not the right way to do it. The whole love ethos that we have completely fell apart. So how do I do it differently now? So what was the first product you started with for Eons?
First product we started with Eons was the Smart Mushroom Coffee. And that was with the intention to like, okay, most people when they hear mushrooms, they think at that time, you know, a lot of people are like, whoa, mushrooms, like, what am I getting into here? So it was like, we wanted to, it was like a Trojan horse type product where at the time, like people were more and more open to mushroom coffees, you know, and products like Mud Water and these kind of things were surfacing. And it was like, it was a conversation starter to get people to try the mushrooms, get their guards down a little bit, with the whole intention again is to like bring them on this journey, this user experience journey, to get them closer and closer to going within.
Yeah.
And the mushrooms, we know at Eons, like, and I know for sure, like the mushrooms have their own agenda. Like they are their own intelligence. All I need to do is like build a community, safety and trust around the community so that people feel ready to try the mushrooms. Once the mushrooms are now in the vessel, they're going to guide you. They're going to do their own thing. And some people don't really get that, but they are innately intelligent.
Totally.
So I'm just like the steward for that. So the coffee was the first way. It was a smarter way to drink coffee without the anxiety and the jitters and that kind of stuff. And then we did the gummies because people were people love gummies. Like, it was just a harmless way that we could introduce the mushrooms to the system. But it was really with the intention to, like, you know, come out with those novel products that work. They help modern day problems like sleep and mm-hmm. gut health and productivity and this kind of stuff. But it was really to pave the way for legal psychedelic microdosing. Like, that was the real thing that changed my life, was microdosing, because I was like constantly going back to the signal, mm-hmm. the signal of the creator. And that's our intention at Eons, is to help people upgrade their relationship to nature and shift. Like I made the shift from a consumer to a co-creator. Mm-hmm. And mushrooms, I believe, are the bridge to do that. And that's what this is all about. It was all to get us to this point where people would be like, okay, I've done the sleep gummies, I've done the coffee, what's next? Well, what's next is a legal psychedelic microdose. And that's what we've come out with. And that's what I'm super happy about and excited, because I know that this is it's a psychedelic. It's a soul revealing product. You're not going to trip out. You're not going to have this hallucinogenic effects. Like, we're on it right now. Everything's copacetic.
Totally.
But it's there's a soul revealing aspect to it. And that for me is exciting, because I know when people start to reveal more parts of their soul, I think that's what we're all here for, is to get more light from the creator so that we could share it with others.
Amen.
And that's what it's about.
Amen, man. So well said.
Thank you.
In nearly all cases with modern health systems, you're waiting months for appointments only to spend a mere 10 minutes with a doctor who quickly hands out a generic diagnosis that is likely rooted in a total misunderstanding of health and causes, and then you're offered a one-size-fits-all medication or invasive treatments with unpleasant side effects. If this sounds all too familiar, consider a different approach with the New Biology Clinic, founded by Dr. Tom Cowan, a respected natural health doctor, author, and speaker. Dr. Cowan's holistic perspective on health and wellness and a deep understanding of the true nature of health and disease sets this clinic apart. With the New Biology Clinic, it's not about quick fixes and suppressing symptoms. The practitioners take time to understand your unique story, recognizing that health is unique to the individual and that illnesses have a variety of causes, physically and metaphysically. Members of the New Biology Clinic enjoy a flat monthly fee that includes a range of valuable services like health consults as needed, practitioner-led live streams on diverse health topics, access to a members-only resource library, and multiple live group sessions every month. These sessions cover fitness, breathing integration, biofield tuning, guided meditation, EFT tapping, and much more. Unlike traditional healthcare systems that thrive on frequent visits, prescriptions, treatments, and suppressing symptoms, the New Biology Clinic's motivation is to make you healthy and keep you that way. Visit newbiologyclinic.com to learn more and use code THEWAYFORWARD for $50 off your account activation. If you're a member of The Way Forward, email hello@thewayforward.com to receive $150 off your account activation. Your journey to genuine healing begins here. Hey y'all, I'm here with Melissa Kupsch from Remedy Academy of Homeopathy. We are so stoked here at The Way Forward to be partnering with Melissa and Remedy in order to spread the message of homeopathy across the world, and also to partner on the eventual development of healing centers across the United States.
People are pretty quickly coming to realize that frequency is the future of medicine. We are witnessing the great resurgence of homeopathy right now. We're really moving away from that suppressive medical model. Whether it's for eczema, asthma, hormones, fertility, anxiety, depression, trauma, whatever it is, it all starts as energy in the person's field first. If we change our field, we can completely change our life. Our two-year academy is open worldwide to anyone who wants to become a homeopath. We've got 5 lecturers and we currently have over 500 students enrolled, which is record numbers in our field. A career in homeopathy is amazing for anyone who wants flexibility in their work and who wants to be valuable in creating this new world. We have stay-at-home parents enrolled. We have ex-medical professionals, grandparents signed up who want to learn how to heal their grandchildren and pass on that invaluable knowledge. We even have husband and wife teams. So my husband enrolled in the course with no prior knowledge of health as a background, and he is loving it.
Kylie is also enrolled as well. So my partner is, and she's so stoked to become a homeopath and to be helping to spread this message across the world.
The thing that we hear from so many of our students is, I found my thing. homeopathy is the key. We harness frequencies from nature and we alter the field of all creations. So if anybody wants to join us or they want to know more about it, they can visit our website.
Yeah, and all that information will be in the show notes. So if you want to learn more about Remedy Academy, also Remedy Collective, also some of the homeopathic products that they have, please just head to the show notes. All of that will be listed there.
So this product that you've developed, this legal microdose,
yeah,
what's it made with? Because it's not psilocybin.
Correct. It's legal. Mm-hmm. And we, as we know, psilocybin is mainly illegal. And everything we do at Eons is legal. We're very forward-facing. So we wanted to bring mushrooms to the world. We wanted to bring psychedelics to the world. We want to bring psilocybin to the world when it's legal, mm-hmm. you know? And we also didn't want to necessarily wait for all those legalization things to happen. So I did a lot of research, a lot of self-exploration as well, and was shown this legal, fully legal psychedelic mushroom that does not contain psilocybin. It contains another active ingredient that works on a different part of the brain that we'll get into. And this mushroom has been around for thousands of years. It's iconic. It's in many ancient religious texts, and we could get into that as well, which is super fascinating.
Definitely want to.
But it's a mushroom that everybody's actually already seen. You've know this mushroom, which is so interesting. And it's like, wow, I've seen it. It's already in my mind. It's in my subconscious. And it's the iconic Amanita muscaria mushroom, sacred mushroom.
And that's the red mushroom with the white dots all over it.
Correct.
Yeah. That's in so many movies. In Mario Brothers, I think. Yeah.
Mario Brothers, the emoji. It's everybody knows this mushroom, but most people haven't tried it. I will say there's like a ton of misinformation and disinformation, or whatever you want to call it, about the mushroom.
Let's talk about that real quick.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. Like when I first, so this mushroom was shown to me in a ceremony, like the image came through and I was like, oh,
wow,
that's really cool. Wonder what that's about. And then I started exploring and researching and I was like, wow, this mushroom has so much folklore to it. And like all these ancient,
lots of Christmas-esque folklore.
Christmas
right?
is a whole thing for sure. We could dive into that now or later. It's totally up to you. Yeah, Christmas, like it's, so this mushroom is known for growing in Siberia, and Siberian shamans would, you know, see it growing underneath coniferous pine trees,
mm-hmm.
Christmas type trees, mm-hmm. and they would say there are these shiny presents underneath the pine trees that mm-hmm. look like Christmas trees, and they would collect these presents, and then they would go and deliver them to the people of the village. And sometimes the snow was so high around the village that they'd have to come in through the chimney
mm-hmm.
and deliver these presents, which were the Amanita muscaria. And the presents were shiny and red and white things. And then, you know, these shamans would, you know, consume, they would give them to their deer, you know, call them reindeer. And the reindeer would, you know, pee out they would urinate. And then the shamans would drink the urine of these reindeer.
The OG urine therapy.
The OG urine therapy, exactly. And then they have all these visions. And, you know, you could see a lot of similarities to that, to with, you know, the reindeer would be flying and all the stuff. Yep. They would drink the urine. They'd be flying. All these kind of similarities to Christmas and, you know, the red and white and all this kind of stuff. And there's many other folklores that we could get into that are super fascinating,
mm-hmm.
you know, including Christianity and Hinduism. And
let's go there since we're already there. And then we'll revisit the misinformation.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So yeah, there's a bunch. There's the Rig Veda, which is the ancient Hindu text where they would, you know, it's like 100 different hymns or something like that, that they would call this thing called the Soma, which was the essence of tapping into God, the divine, that was, they would use an elixir. And this elixir, you know, it's still unidentified to this day. They kept it a mystery. But another word for that they called it was Amrita.
Mm.
I don't know, kind of similar.
Amanita.
Amrita. Yeah. Like, it's pretty interesting that it's a close name. And they said, you know, it was king of the plant world, although it wasn't a plant. Okay, what does that mean? And so there's a lot of people think that the Soma, which was this elixir that they would use to create these hymns to connect with the divine, was actually the Amanita. Mm. Pretty interesting. And the soma is, you know, talked about a lot in this ancient text, which is very interesting. That's one of these ancient religious texts that it refers to. Another one is the Celtic gods. There's one called Brigid, and Brigid was this feminine energy that had bright red hair and pale white skin.
Mm.
And she would come around in the springtime, and they would consider her a fertility god, you know, to bring in the new essence of the spring. And she would grow under, or she'd be seen under certain trees, you know, another similarity. But there, it goes deep into this whole thing. There's, you know, tons and tons of information on this kind of stuff that they literally worshipped
mm-hmm.
this fertility god, you know. And then there's another fertility god story, and I'm saying this is absolute truth. I'm just saying this is
right.
the folklore.
Right, right, right.
It's not my theology whatsoever. But there was also a gentleman that got to study the Dead Sea Scrolls for an extended period of time. You know, I think it's like 8 years where he just studied the Dead Sea Scrolls. His name's John Marco Allegro. And he wrote this very controversial book called Sacred Mushrooms and the Cross. And in this very controversial book of a guy that's, you know, an expert theologist, knew Hebrew, knew Greek, knew Aramaic. This guy's translating the Bible better than most people ever could. And his theology at the end of it was that maybe Jesus was either using mushrooms with his disciples, mainly this Amanita muscaria, or in fact was a mushroom himself, which is super controversial and pissed a lot of people off, so much that the Vatican banned the book and the guy's career was ruined. But it was pretty wild to see, like, this guy that studied the Dead Sea Scrolls for probably longer than anybody, that had amazing, you know, capabilities at translating, put his career on the line saying that, you know, Jesus was potentially a mushroom.
So like a metaphorical thing, like a metaphorical person, but was really a mushroom that was teaching.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That, or there's parts that he's saying that he would say that there wasn't even the human. It was just they were using the mushroom as tapping into the Christ consciousness. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, wild stuff. But I'm not saying I fully believe any of those. However, it makes me curious to think all these different...
Interesting to consider,
for sure.
Yeah, so there seems to be something, irrespective of which culture you look at, which religion, spiritual preference you look at, there's something about these that seem pretty interesting, essentially.
Keeps coming up, Alec, in all these deeply religious and spiritual texts, where they all have one thing in common, which is fertility, which represents life and, you know, bringing life to the world. And accessing the divine.
Mm-hmm.
They all three of those, and there's more, but all three of those folklores all talk about accessing this divine nature, which is really cool. And that's what, you know, gets us really excited about this thing is okay, accessing more of the divine, of that creative mind.
Yeah. You brought up Siberia, and I know you're a big fan of the Ringing Cedars book series.
Thanks to you.
Yeah. Well, thanks to Gabriel, really. Yeah. I featured Gabriel, and shout out to him. I love that guy. We're talking about Gabriel Miguel. I don't remember what episode, but I'll throw that in the show notes. Cause, if you haven't explored the Ringing Cedars of Russia book series, the Anastasia material, or Gabriel and the Anastasia Foundation, it really is incredible stuff. But have you thought about the connection between these being primarily in Siberia and Anastasia, if she exists, is in Siberia, and the, you know, wisdom that she offers and the connection to nature there?
Dude.
The concept of kin's domains, which is like, yeah, no duh, that's how humanity should be living, you know?
Right?
Yeah,
I agree. When I heard that, I remember hearing that podcast. I was on like a 14-hour drive from Austin to Boulder, Colorado.
Mm.
And it's literally the last hour of the drive. And I'm tired and you know, and I'm exhausted. And my girlfriend at the time put on the podcast, you know, for whatever reason. And I swear, like, my whole body lit up, you know, from the resonance of what was being spoken about. And I was like, wow, this is the truth, man. Like, this is incredible. And I was deep into working with the Amanita at that time. So hearing Siberia and all this kind of stuff, it literally lit me up on a visceral level. Like, I knew there was something there. And yes, of course, I fully believe that. Like, these Siberian ringing cedars, which if you actually really look into it, like, in my mind, I thought cedars were like a totally different type of tree, but the Siberian ringing cedars is essentially a pine tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of style, like a Christmas tree type thing. And these Amanita, they're completely symbiotic, the Amanita, right? So what does that mean? You can't grow them. Like, there's no farmer that can grow Amanita. Like, they grow when they want, where they want. They're completely seasonal and they're completely symbiotic.
I love that. It's so cool.
It's so
cool. They can't be exploited as much, essentially.
Ever.
Yeah.
They can. They won't be exploited. They grow where they want, when they want. No one knows when they're going to pop up.
It's so cool. I love
that. So it's like once they pop up, it's truly a gift from God, the creator. Yeah. And like, you have the opportunity to, you know, forge them in a sacred way with the intention that you're going to bring these to people that have the right intention themselves. Like, what are you using this for? Are you using this to try to go on a trip out scenario with your buddies? It's not going to work. Like, they know, they have the intelligence of what are you really using this for? And I have so many stories. Oh, there's so many stories I could go into, but the one of them is the book that really got me into this, which is by this doctor in Russia. Her name is Baba Masha. It's the name that she uses to protect her identity, but she did a internal study on 8,000 people with the Amanita, all different ranges of dosing, from super microdose to really large doses. But the results, and she just did this for her own curiosity, with no intentionality of selling the products or anything like that. It was like, really, I'm just collecting data and I'm going to share the data with the people. The Amanita has helped her and her husband out tremendously. She's got all kinds of stories and pictures. It's remarkable, with pain and with addiction and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, long story short, she did a study with 8,000 people over 3 years, and it helped people with big things like anxiety, depression, addiction to cocaine and opioids and alcohol, and other things like psoriasis and just chronic pain, like really all over the map kind of stuff. Wow. But the results that they got back were like cure rates. You know, I know that's a bold term to throw around, but people at the end of it, like, either had no more pain or no more addiction or no more anxiety or depression. So it sounds to me like they're cured. And the rates were like 70 to 90% on average.
Wow.
It's insane.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. There's something about that too, given that, like, I know people who can just easily get the spores to grow some type of psilocybin mushroom, or people who have farms and you can always find it under cow shit, essentially. And like, that's great. And of course, I'm not poo-pooing psilocybin or saying there's anything wrong with that, but there's something really cool about how this can't just be cultivated in a way that psilocybin-based mushrooms can. It's something that you really have to rely on God a little bit more instead of man's co-creative capacity, which, like, again, I want to be clear here. Our co-creative capacity can be used for very, very incredible things to enhance the properties of nature, to bring nature back into our lives because we've become so disconnected from it. Mm-hmm. But there's something about that is just really, really cool that I love.
Yeah. It's so cool. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Psilocybin, it can be grown in someone's closet and wherever, on cow shit, absolutely. And and that's cool. That's its own thing. This mushroom, exactly like you said, it can only be created from God. And it, so it has that true divine connection.
Yes. That's what I'm getting at. That's exactly what I'm getting at.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
And then when you experience that mushroom, like, you're going to have that true divine experience, whatever that is for you. Like, and that's the thing. It has commonalities when people use it. And, you know, the feedback I get from people is great. Typically it's great.
Yep.
And it's very unique to whatever the person is going through at that in their life, because it's revealing parts of their soul, and everybody has their own journey that they're clearly on.
Yeah. Beautifully said. And that's my experience of it too. So I'm on it right now. Mm-hmm. It's really subtle, but I know for me, and this is through Qigong, through even big emotional releases, through, you know, various ways that I connect back to here, this seems to help facilitate the connection back to here. And how I experience that connection back to here, whether it's on this or through Qigong or something like that, is I can feel a subtle weight here. And it's not like a heaviness that it's like, oh, my heart aches or anything like that. It's like, I feel so much of my essence here that it feels heavier here in my chest. Does that make sense? Like, in a good way.
Yeah.
And it's like, it serves as a constant reminder to not be in here so much because I feel the weight here. Mm-hmm. It naturally pulls me into a deeper heart space. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I experience it.
I love that. That's very well articulated because that's essentially what it's doing, Alec, is it's slowing down the mind, the conditioned mind, and opening up the heart.
Yeah.
It's bringing it, it goes literally into the subconscious, which is in the body, which is in the heart. It's all these things are connected. So it's, that's essentially what it's doing. And it knows that, you know, yeah, it essentially has its own intelligence to know that the user is in their conditioned mind. Mm-hmm. So it helps them be that bridge to slow down their thoughts.
Yeah. Like
so many people are just stuck in loops and it's like, yeah, just slow down. And it really, really helps with that. It's and in a gentle way. It's way more gentle than I would say than psilocybin.
Yeah. That's my experience of it too. And granted, you have put like a pretty incredible micro dose into this too, which I really respect. And so correct me if I'm wrong, the Amanita muscaria itself is legal.
Correct.
That speaks volumes because you very easily could have just put a big ass hero's dose inside your product. And then like, I just feel like that would have been horrible.
Yeah.
It says a lot that you put like the most subtle microdose. So talk to me about how many milligrams or even grams you've taken yourself of this, your experience of that, and then what your thought process was behind putting such a subtle microdose and what amount that is. Cause I think it's 1 milligram, right?
That's no, it's, it ends up being, it's 50 milligrams of the Amanita extract.
Got it. Okay.
But that ends up being, it's a 10-to-1 ratio. So it ends up being 5 milligrams of the active ingredient.
Got it. Okay.
So
okay.
5/1000ths of a gram. Like you're right. And
what is the active ingredient again?
It's muscimol.
Muscimol. Okay. Yeah. So that's the psychedelic ingredient inside Amanita muscaria.
Correct.
Got it. When
the Amanita muscaria has essentially two predominant active ingredients when it's in its raw form, muscarine and ibotenic acid.
Got it.
The ibotenic acid is the one, if people eat the mushroom raw, they're going to have a negative experience to say the least. You know, they'll be nauseous. There's a bunch of weird symptoms that come up and it's designed not to eat raw, like most mushrooms, like a lot of things in nature, don't just go pick it, especially if it's a medicine.
Yeah.
However, once you heat up this mushroom, whether it's in a tea or in a baking process or sonification or extraction process, once you heat it up, the muscarine and the ibotenic acid heat up to form this new active ingredient called muscimol. And the muscimol doesn't have any of these toxic, nauseous side effects.
Got
it's clearly a almost like a nootropic at this point, but a psychedelic nootropic. It works on the GABA receptor of the brain. The same, you know, for the people, your listeners probably know this, but GABA receptor of the brain is the receptor that modulates anxiety, addiction, fear. You know, it's when people are, their GABA receptor is overstimulated or inflamed, they end up going to the amygdala part of their brain, which is the survival brain. Fight or flight. And what this mushroom does is it coats that receptor of the brain, muscimol coats that receptor of the brain, and now shifts them from, you know, the survival brain into the mammalian brain, and the mammalian brain eventually into the right side of your brain, you know, if you continue to use it, which is pretty cool. So that's essentially what it's doing. Where were we going with that?
We were talking about why you chose to do the micro dose instead of the hero's dose. Yeah, well, first, your experience of how many grams have you done of this at kinds. A time?
I experimented.
What's the most you've done?
21 grams.
21, okay.
Yeah.
21. That's like way beyond, maybe I'm trying to relate it to psilocybin though, like what would be considered quote hero's dose.
Yeah, it's like a 3-to-1, I would say. Like,
oh, okay. So maybe it is kind of like a hero's dose.
It's still a hero's dose for sure. It's very large. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody, but all this to say is like, I experimented with Amanita for 1.5 years before we landed on this will be the dose that we bring out to the world. Every kind of dose you can imagine, you know, from 1/1000ths of a gram to grams, full on grams. And what we realized is truly less is more. Like microdose, this thing is amazing. As you start to get into the macros, it starts to read your psyche And it starts to realize, like, why are you doing this? And all it's going to do is going to just show you more stuff about yourself in a shorter period of time that can be pretty uncomfortable.
Mm.
It's just like too much, too fast.
Got it.
And it's not what people, you know, people would take it to try to have this, you know, ceremonial type experience. And it's just, it's maybe not ideal for that. It could work, but it's not like what they think is going to happen.
Got it.
You know, it's just basically going to put you on your ass and it's going to show you a bunch of stuff. It's going to be pretty uncomfortable. And as opposed to, you take it in a microdose and it's very gentle and it just starts to reveal one thing at a time.
So it's basically, you could say, the difference between ejecting you out of your conditioning, like suddenly, versus, okay, let's slowly peel back the layers of this onion.
Correct.
Got it.
It's just way more enjoyable and way more practical. And that's what we realized truly was, like, microdose, this thing is amazing.
Mm.
Macrodose, it's not what it's all about. Like, you can do it, you can journey and you can do it ceremonial, but it's usually can be pretty uncomfortable depending where the user's at. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a lot of psychonauting experience. And for me, it was awesome. My two large heroic doses, I did 15 grams in the forest and 21 grams in the forest, both with facilitators. And for me, it was awesome.
Yeah.
I got to see a lot. It showed me a lot of things about myself. It told me things to remove from my life, which was pretty awesome. Told me to remove alcohol. I haven't drank alcohol since.
Good for you. Same. I haven't drank in 2 years.
It's awesome. Mm. You know, so that was really cool. Changed my diet around, changed my drivers. Like, it really showed me a lot about myself in those big doses, which was huge. It showed me a lot in a really short amount of time. It also showed me that the mushroom has capabilities. So the more that you build a relationship with it, you could tap into these capabilities.
Wow.
And that's what the Vikings used to use it for. Vikings used to take the Amanita before battle. Wow. Because it would slow down their perception of time. So imagine seeing the enemy coming in slow motion, but you could move at full speed. And that's what a lot of people, the feedback I get, Alec, is like, it starts to change their perception of time. It starts, wow, to slow things down, which is really cool because, and it makes sense because as we get more and more to the conditioned mind, what do most people say? It's like, the older you get, time goes by faster and
totally,
faster.
Totally, man. Totally. So
their conditioned mind is what's going on, and they're running out of gigabytes. This shifts you into the creative mind where time does go slow when you're in creative. You're in the flow state, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're really shifting from the beta state into more alpha states and theta states.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a study that we're in the process of doing with neuroscientists in Canada, where we do the brain mapping showing the Amanita. So that's another part, wow, of the business is like, yeah, I could, you know, there's Alex talking about it and all that kind of stuff. And it lands for some people, it doesn't for others. And that's totally cool. But we want to bring the data out around,
yeah,
it and just show the science of what this thing actually does. And it does some, and it's legal. So, mm-hmm, we could do that. We could study it and talk about it and all that kind of cool stuff.
Awesome. Yeah. By the way, going back to the other products you have, I've loved your sleep gummies. I've, yeah, loved your coffee, especially because, like, I tend to have gut issues with coffee.
Yeah.
So yours being that it's not fully just coffee, it, yeah, has other substances in it. Which mushroom, again, remind me?
It's three mushrooms in there. It's cordyceps, yep, for energy, lion's mane for cognitive function, and chaga for gut health.
Yep.
And it's mold free. Like most coffees in America, we have the worst coffee standards in the world. Mm. So we get all the people that can't sell their coffee in their own country send it to America, and most of it ends up testing for mold. I think it's, yeah, like 50%.
I think that means that it's just like decomposing already. So it's already in, like, initiated the pleomorphic cycle, or there's other stuff in the coffee that's not supposed to be in there.
Yeah.
So ultimately that's not good for your gut. I think that you have having those three mushrooms in there, especially the one for gut health. Like, my experience of the coffee is I don't get as many gut issues,
yeah,
when I consume it. I get gut issues pretty bad with coffee and also, yeah, anxiety. And I also don't feel that when I consume your coffee. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Thank
Shameless
you.
Plug for you there.
I love it. No, thank you. The way forward promo code.
Yeah.
Said, yeah.
Yeah. All that'll be in the show notes. But back to the Dialed product. That's the name of it, right?
Dialed. Exactly.
Yeah. Why did you choose that name?
Well, it's like we talked on earlier. It's so cool. It comes back to it is there's so much noise,
yeah,
in the world right now, especially. We're bombarded by noise. So Dialed is to really quiet the noise and dial you in to your true self. Mm-hmm. When you're dialed into your true self, you're dialed. You know, man, the signal is strong and you're like this antenna. And when the antenna signal is dialed in, you're locked in. And
quite literally an antenna. So yeah,
that's what I mean. We,
yeah,
know this,
for sure,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
We know that we're these antennas. So And we all know that we've had these moments of, call it divinity, call it being locked in, call it flow state, call it being dialed. We've had them. Yeah. And like, why wouldn't you want to experience more of this, right? And that's where I'm at with it. So it's like, okay, how do we get people to be dialed in to the signal of the creator?
Mm-hmm.
I believe this is how.
I bet if you did this fasted, even with a microdose, it'd be pretty incredible. I haven't done that yet.
I fast every day for 24 hours every day, and then I have one meal a day.
Okay, I thought you were about to say like literally like you're breatharian. Yeah, you're breatharian now, right?
I wish. No,
did you listen to episode 142? I'm just kidding, but yeah, that's awesome. So your experience of it is fasted.
Yes.
What's that like?
It's
because
awesome.
Because I don't want to go into 142. I know I made a joke about it, but episode 142, I talked with Mike and we talked about how when you're consuming other substances, you are quite literally consuming other voices. That's the way he talks about it. And it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So when you eliminate the other voices, what does that feel like when you're on that?
Such a good question. No one's ever asked me that. And it's really like, I'm just developing this relationship with the mushrooms.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the only thing that I put in my body throughout the day is just mushrooms and minerals. And these are both kingdoms, right? A lot of people don't maybe know that, but there's the plant kingdom, mineral kingdom, mushroom kingdom, animal kingdom. They're all their own kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only thing I put in my body every day. And when I was developing this product and every other Eons product, I was fasted. 7-day fast, 5-day fast, like just to get...
I didn't know you were a big fasting guy too.
Yeah. Changed my life.
Incredible.
Changed my life. I know you've been really...
15-day, but dude, aside from my 15-day, I've done like a week one and a 5-day one, and I haven't done many like medium-ish long fasts aside from that. But yes, it changed my life too. Absolutely changed my life.
Changes everything. It's a master code. And when as you know, when you're fasting and then you have, that's all that you're putting in is these little doses of mushrooms, like you really get to see how they work. Otherwise, there's just so much noise, exactly like you said, like all these things, these shantis, right? These spells that people are putting in to these products.
Totally.
So much noise. So it's like really just getting, it's getting quiet, man. It's just listening so we could attune to the signal. Because once you're on the signal, you're dialed in. And then it's like you're being utilized as a, you know, by the creator, as opposed to how I was for a long part of my life, was literally like on a leash to my conditioned mind that was, you know, the driver of my life. So it was like, okay, unleashing from that. And now I'm here, creator, utilize me. That's like how I approach life, is like, I'm here to be utilized, I'm here to be of service. And as long as I keep doing that, awesome things keep happening. You know, it's not about Alex Wolf anymore. It's really about like, okay, how can I be utilized by the creator to help make an impact for mental health? That's really my driver.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thanks. Very beautifully said, man. I want to talk about some of the intentionality, like the process to create this and some of the other things that are in it that help activate it. So let's go there now.
Yeah, intentionality is huge, as we talked about. So like we also said, you know, these mushrooms only grow in nature. So we have some foragers out there that have been working with the mushroom for a really long time. They have developed their own deep relationship with it.
Cool.
Some that came from, you know, one guy, I won't mention his name, but really traumatic childhood, like really rough stuff, really bad. And he attributes all his healing to working with the Amanita, you know?
Incredible.
And he was an insomniac for many, many years. It cured his insomnia, which is one thing this does. It really helps with your sleep. It resets your circadian rhythm after 3 weeks of use, which is pretty awesome. Like the sun... You know, I don't know what can get closer to God than the sun, right? It's the bringer of all light and all life. So it really brings you closer to that. So anyway, there's that.
Well, pause on that real quick too. I mean, it's cool that the guy who's foraging has such a deep reverence for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Really big deal.
That's what, it goes back to what you were saying.
Not some random dude that's like, oh, fuck this. I just want to get home.
Yeah. His whole life is foraging. Yeah. He lives in the forest most of the time, right? So it's like, as you brought up earlier, is like, yeah, who I'm collaborating with Eons this time is like, I'm really getting to know these people, you know? And most of the time I'm having them over at my house and we're doing mushrooms to really like, okay, let's peel back.
Yeah.
Let's see where we're at here. What's your driver? Is it about making money? Is it about to impress some chick? Like, what are you really all about here? Because I know where my driver is.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that took many years to get to. So it's, and I've also, you know, the flip side of that, when I first started the company, it was attracting all kinds of characters, you know, and a lot of some cool people, some not so cool people. Right. And like, but everybody's got their own intentions, you know? So it's like now fast forward, it's been a few years since inception. It's like really getting clear with who the people are. And so, yeah, all this is a long way of saying, but the two guys that I get the mushrooms from have been working with the Amanita, you know, one guy for like, I think 12 years and another guy for 25 years.
Incredible.
Like the other,
so cool.
The other guy supplies the Amanita to Baba Masha, which was the book that I read that got me into this whole
thing. That's so cool.
It's awesome. Yeah. And I, like, that's the cool thing about mushrooms that I'll say, Alec, is like compared to the cannabis industry, cannabis was so competitive and so greedy and so like people just saw an opportunity. Mushroom people are really more collaborative and helpful and humble because the mushrooms keep them that way as long as you keep using it. You can't outfool the mushrooms. You can kind of outfool yourself on cannabis because it's distorted. It's not its true essence anymore.
Not true cannabis.
Not true cannabis.
Totally.
So yeah, that's essentially the sourcing of it. And then with that, okay, that's one part of it. And then like anything in life, anything is like, you can have the thing, but how do you deliver it to somebody? Mm-hmm. And that could be even with information, right? And that's why like, yeah, you have this dope studio. So when people tune in, it's a pleasant experience, right? And it's like, it gets absorbed differently, right? So
totally.
That's, you get it. And that's part of it is the delivery of something. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've learned, you know, as my years as an entrepreneur is like, yeah, you can have the best thing, but how you deliver it to someone is a big, big part of it. So that's why we went and got 14 patents on the delivery technology.
Incredible.
So I could take any molecule, pretty much any molecule under the sun, we're choosing mushrooms, and I could get the human body to absorb it better, faster, stronger. So it doesn't matter the noise that you got going on. It doesn't matter how much you ate that day. It doesn't matter if you're fasted. This is going right into your bloodstream, breaking the blood-brain barrier in about a minute.
Wow.
So it's like, you're feeling this way, a minute later, you're going to have a state change. And what that state change does is it builds a relationship now with the product. Because it's not like, oh, I take this. Yeah, I don't know if it's working or not. Like so many supplements.
Well, supplements, and then also anything in the psychedelic space, like, I think I feel it now. It's been 45 minutes. I don't know. Are you seeing those colors? Yeah, dude, I see that. Right. But with this, that's totally my experience of it. You take it and like within a couple minutes, you definitely start to feel it for sure. And it's subtle. It's not like, oh my God, like I'm tripping balls. It's not like that at all.
Yeah.
Not even a little.
I remember when I first got the text from you, you're like, wow, this is really fast acting.
Yeah.
I was like, exactly. Because the people that really need this product are suffering. Like, yeah, anyone could take it. Why are you taking it is, you know, what I'll ask you to ask yourself, check in with yourself. Mm. But the people that this is designed for is with mental health, with anxiety, addiction, PTSD, fear, panic. Mm. And when you're in those kind of states, you're one choice or one decision away from really making, you know, bringing you down a, what could be a dark path.
Right.
So we want something to act quickly so that they can go back to homeostasis and make a more optimal decision for themselves and their family, et cetera. So it's like, okay, yeah, we have a very fast acting, precise dose, as opposed to pretty much 90% of supplements or other psychedelics, like the way that it's ingested, you're actually overdosing because it goes through the GI tract and then your GI tract has to process it through the liver. And you're actually end up getting like 10% of the active. You're not even getting what you're paying for in supplements, which is a whole other thing. So it's like, no, this, you're getting every little bit of the active right into your bloodstream, straight to your blood-brain, past the blood-brain barrier, so you can experience what you're desiring to experience.
Mm. Most of our ancestors ate nose to tail, which means they consumed all parts of the animal, didn't waste really any of the animal. And that means that their diets were naturally rich in essential nutrients like collagen. And unfortunately, most modern diets are severely lacking in essential nutrients like collagen, which is why Paleo Valley made their 100% grass-fed bone broth protein powder. The term grass-fed today is thrown around pretty wildly. It can mean anything from 100% grass-fed to just partially grass-fed to minimally grass-fed and really primarily grain-fed. But Paleo Valley goes the extra mile to ensure their bone broth protein powder is sourced from 100% grass-fed cows. I have here in front of me the chocolate bone broth protein powder, and the ingredients in this are bones and water, organic coconut milk powder, organic cacao bean, organic chocolate flavor, organic monk fruit extract, and Himalayan pink salt. That's it. They also have a vanilla flavor, and they also have an unflavored version, but I am partial to the chocolate flavor. It tastes just like the chocolate milk that I used to have as a kid, except for it's not toxic. It's actually really good for you. I've been shopping with Paleo Valley for years. I've used their bone broth protein powder, their 100% grass-fed beef sticks, also their organ supplements, and I've found their products to be nutrient dense, high quality, natural, and made with integrity. So if you're ready to upgrade your health in just 30 seconds a day and get this essential nutrient collagen, head to the show notes or visit paleovalley.com/the way forward. And when you check out, a 15% discount will be automatically applied to your order. Experience the difference of truly natural, nutrient dense, 100% grass-fed bone broth protein powder and so many more incredible products with Paleo Valley. At this point in history, community is essential. And as the world shifts in ways we never imagined, finding spaces that foster true connection with like-minded people is more important than ever. Join us this year for our third annual Confluence Festival, May 7th through the 12th in Bandera, Texas. Confluence is a transformational gathering where a like-minded community comes together on a stunning regenerative farm just outside of San Antonio, offering the perfect opportunity to connect deeply with nature, paradigm-shifting knowledge, and one another. With multiple offerings running simultaneously, Confluence features a dynamic mix of lectures, workshops, live music, movement classes, and more, covering topics from circadian biology and consciousness to dome building and regenerative agriculture. Attendees are encouraged to CYOA, choose your own adventure, ensuring a truly personalized experience. This year, we are so stoked to welcome Dr. Diane Hennessy-Powell, a leading neuroscientist featured in the viral Telepathy Tapes podcast series, sharing her research on the science of telepathy and expanded consciousness. Dr. Gerald Pollack will reveal his groundbreaking work on the fourth phase of water, reshaping how we understand biology and energy. We'll also be joined by Dr. Kelly Brogan, Eileen McCusick, Beta Austin, Tom Barnett, and many, many more incredible workshop leaders and lecturers. Plus, we'll have live musical performances from Lincoln Jesser, Head Flux, DJ Mike Winner, Joel Rafiti, and several other incredible musicians and performers. And when it comes to nourishment, we believe food is medicine. I promise you will not find better food at any event you attend. The full-scale restaurant on-site serves farm-to-table meals with ingredients grown and raised right on the property or sourced from local farms, providing a deeply nourishing experience for both body and spirit. And our event accommodations are designed for every comfort level. Camp under the stars, stay in a cozy tiny home, enjoy luxurious glamping, or park your RV. If you prefer a hotel, we've got you covered with nearby hotel options as well. And your whole family is welcome. Our unschooling village, led by experienced guides, provides engaging activities for kids aged 2 through 12, ensuring that parents can fully immerse themselves in the experience while their little ones learn and play in a supportive environment. Come be a part of an unforgettable event surrounded by like-minded community where we gather in celebration of health, freedom, and coherence. Visit confluenceevent.com or head to the show notes to learn more and reserve your spot today. And talk to me about the difference between like traditional liposome. Like, I know a lot of people take liposomal, insert literally any supplement, and that's supposed to be better, but you went above and beyond that. You have desiccated liposomes that are the carrier. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, no, that's correct.
Yeah, can you explain the difference?
Yeah, so liposomes, for people that know or don't know, have been around for a long time. They've been used in supplementation and, you know, all this kind of stuff for 20, 30 years. And they are a more effective way of delivering molecules. Yes. This is desiccated liposome technology. So what does that mean? It means it encapsulates the molecule, and it either keeps it wet or keeps it dry, depending on the ingredient, if it's hydrophobic or hydrophilic. Mm. So some active ingredients prefer to be kept wet.
What about this?
This does. Mushrooms do.
There's something about that too.
There's something
wet,
about
wet
that.
Because water, like the imprinting of something, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like, and that's what we noticed is like, okay, a mushroom powder doesn't have the same effect as, per se, like a mushroom tincture.
Mm-hmm.
Tincture is better. It's wet. because it's closer to its true form of having the water. You get it. You know,
totally.
You know, the water is the whole thing.
Dude, it's my obsession. So
yeah. I love that.
Yep.
I get it. I was there.
Yep.
Side story, yeah. But yes. So yeah, it's part of this whole relationship of the universe is the water. So it's like, okay, in certain ingredients, you want to keep it wet, which is hydrophilic. So that's what this desiccated liposomal technology does, is it keeps it wet. Now, when it hits your saliva, it goes right into your cell through the mucosal, breaks the blood-brain barrier, boom, instant effect. Mm-hmm. And now it gives the user experience a validation experience. Like, wow, I was feeling this way. Now I'm feeling this way. And now there's a trust that's being built between the relationship of the active ingredient. So it's like, yeah, I know. I know this thing works for me. And that's, it's all about relationship. Really, everything's in relationship,
right?
In nature and life in general. So it's like, it's really about building that. But yeah, that's why we got those patents. And the cool thing is those patents can be used for any active ingredient. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's parts of me that wants to bring out some other really, really cool things using these as well. You know,
how do you prevent this from getting in the hand, like this thing in the hands of people who are using it for nefarious purposes?
Yeah, it's really a discernment. Mm-hmm. And
you thank know, God you have control of the patent on it right now.
Yeah, my business partner and I have the patents exclusively, which is awesome.
Incredible.
And it's really about discernment and like getting to know people, like what's their drivers, right? And why do they want to do this stuff? So yeah, that's
a yeah, big like part you're of not gonna have a Pfizer rep approach you and be like, nah, dude, I'm good. Yeah, I'm good here. No, thank you.
Yeah, we get tested all the time. I'll say, like, I had this Japanese I won't mention their name, but this huge Japanese conglomerate pharma. Because in Japan, they're always looking for these alternative delivery technologies because it's known that the Japanese have like smaller esophaguses. So they don't like taking like large pills.
Hmm. That's interesting. Okay.
That's what I was told. Didn't I was know like, that. Okay. So they were looking for these different technologies. And I won't mention their name, of course, but as I got to in the due diligence and all this kind of stuff, it was just like the vibe was off, you know?
Yeah.
And there was a big cash injection that they were wanting to do, but they would have control of this technology for a whole array of products. And it just didn't feel right, you know? And it's
good
like
for you, man.
You know, and it's like not about that. It's like, I want to have fun doing this thing. I want like I just want to have fun and I want to make an impact. And in order to do that, it's like you got to align with the right people.
Totally.
And the mushrooms are the guide for that, you know? Like they're very good at showing me,
keeping you in check.
Keeping
your conditioned mind, like your condition possibly. And I could totally see it, man, because it creeps up for all of us. It's like being willing to acknowledge like, yeah, a piece of me wants to make money. And like, how do I keep that in check too?
Yeah.
Like make money very intentionally though, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, man. Thanks for noticing that. It's true. They keep me in check. Like that's the cool thing with mushrooms, especially psilocybin, I'll say, is like, man, like they keep me humble, dude. Mm-hmm. Like I just keep going back to them, and when my ego starts getting a little too active, they'll humble me real quick.
I love that. I love that, man. There's a few other things I want to explore,
mm-hmm.
and one is revisiting the conversation we had off camera on why specifically mushrooms are so potent to reconnect you with God. And I'm going to try to articulate this as best I can, what I said earlier. So we'll see if I can. And I wanted to see if you have anything to add to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So because the mycelium is so ancient and it is pervasive, it encompasses all of the land on the earth. I don't know if there's water-based mycelium. There probably is in some form, but nonetheless, this is like this network that goes all over the earth. And there is segments that are different than other parts. And there's some that are segmented from off from other ones. I'm not saying it's all ultimately connected in terms of the physicality of it metaphysically.
Mm-hmm.
Again, ether, there's a like a medium between you and I right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that I look at it is harnessing all of the information of all of nature into itself and sharing it amongst nature. That's why trees communicate via the mycelium below them. Like it really is this incredibly intelligent physical essence, physical representation of God. Or you could even say that this is a physical version of the Akashic records in a way. And that's what you're consuming when you tap into, especially like, this is what I love about this particular substance that's in your product. You're not like, it's not Jimmy growing it like in his, under a tray, under his fluorescent lights in his garage.
Yeah.
It's completely different.
Right.
This is like actually taking what I just described and then accompanying with it with, you know, some modern technology, which can be useful to help deliver it to your body. Like, it's incredible. Incredible. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, thanks. So well said. It's hard to add on top of that. It's so well done, well said. But yeah, it's really that. It's the mycelial network is the largest living organism in this earth. That says a lot. It's the largest, and it's constantly communicating. It's bringing light and life and water to all plant life. It's really, like you said, like the, I've never heard it put like the Akashic Records, but it is. It's stored all this consciousness from the beginning of time. And it's like Mother Nature's brain, you know? Yeah. So it's like, it's just so cool. And so like, if I'm going to align with anything, that sounds like a good place to start, you know? That's, pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, dude, I think so too. One thing I want to revisit, and I said we'd circle back to this, is the like biotech. Again, because of what people have experienced over the last 5 years, what, you know, all these pharmaceutical companies are developing. BioNTech is literally a company name. I bet that can be kind of challenging for you. It's like, damn it, dude, why do they have to name themselves that? But what is your description of biotech?
Biotech, my description is using nature and technology combined to make improvements on whatever category that you're going into. It can be agriculture, it could be supplementation, could be psychedelics, but it's using nature combined with some sort of technology is my limited understanding of it. And that's how I look at it, as it can be very helpful. In this case, you know, we have a bunch of really cool lanes with biotechnology that I could get into just to show like people like, wow, this is cool.
Yeah, sure, please.
Yeah, so we have the delivery technology called Quixome, you know, 14 patents on that one. To It's been tested on 175 different molecules, ranging from anything you could think of, vitamin C, CBD, nicotine, THC, mushrooms. Like, so like, imagine, you know, where I want to go with this, Alec, is imagine like peptides or NAD, oral dissolve, you know, like this is really cool lane to explore, you know? So that's just where my mind goes. But yes, we have the delivery technology for that. We're also, they're putting me on the board of directors of this publicly traded company that owns this technology, is another one called Agrarious. And Agrarious is a plant signaling technology. There's 300 patents on it. It's electromagnetic.
Whoa.
And what it does is it signals the crops using the mycelial network. It signals the crops that hard times are coming, whether hard times are coming or not. So then it starts to communicate that through the mycelial network. And the mycelial network communicates within itself. It says, oh, hard times are coming for these crops. Let's bring them more water. It structures the water.
Whoa.
It structures the water for the crops. So now they're obviously getting way more benefits, brings more nutrients, helps them absorb more light. And in doing so, ends up being it reduces pesticides. It reduces fungicides. And it reduces fertilizer by up to 50%.
Wow.
Just by communicating now using biotechnology. And this thing works on everything, every single crop you can imagine, different in range, but like on the low end, 10% increase, you know, on tomatoes, up to 100% increase on dates or sugar or this kind of stuff. Like it works on everything. And this is another good example of biotechnology can be used to revolutionize farming. You know, this is completely organic. It's completely biodynamic. It's just communicating and giving the crops information. So that's another really cool one. And we have another one where we convert sugar. You got to forgive my grade 10 science background here.
No, you're good, dude. I'm probably not going to know the pathway or whatever.
I'm more like the branding guy. You know?
It's all good. It's all good. Let's hear it though, as best you can.
Yeah, the inverted sugar technology is another really cool one. So we could take any kind of sugar. Picture the worst garbage sugar, you know, toxic, all this, and we invert it, so when the body now ingests it thinks that it's fruit sugar. And it just burns it off right away. It doesn't store it as fat, doesn't store it as this brown fat. So imagine like eating a gummy bear or ice cream or one of these junk foods, and your body just burns it off right away. And that's a good thing. Like you want, if you want instant,
like if people are going to consume that stuff, at least consume it in that way. Hopefully.
That's what I'm saying. Right, at least I'm not saying like to endorse that, but all I'm saying is like, we can take something that's negative and now turn it into a positive using this technology. And you could put it in any kind of thing and it'll just convert it into fruit sugar. So that's another really cool, because the sugar thing is a whole big thing, right?
Yeah. It's a problem.
It's a problem.
Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to ask related to Eon specifically, is there anything that you guys are developing in house?
For the future?
Yeah,
of course. So this is the main focus right now, is to help with mental health, and we have studies coming out with it, like I mentioned, and doing studies on veterans as well with PTSD, which is really cool. Very excited for those to come out. So this is the main focus. However, in the future, of course, there's some things I'm really excited about. You know, you could use your imagination and think like a legal microdose version of LSD for creativity. You know, that'd be pretty cool. That's what we're working on.
Synthetically derived or naturally derived?
It would essentially be one molecule off from what LSD essentially is. So it wouldn't be LSD anymore. It would be LSP or LS, whatever we decide to call it. So it would be, I guess in that case, a synthetic version of what it is. But it would be an extreme microdose.
Got it.
And it would be, you know, this is something I'm playing around with. It hasn't got to the point yet where we're fully for sure going to bring it out. So it's still an exploration phase. And then another thing,
I appreciate that you like do a lot of exploration. I'm sure you do a lot of like self-exploration with it too.
A lot, dude.
Yeah,
a lot, like every kind of which way that you can imagine. But I will say this, I've tried the microdose LSD and I was able to skip rope at a pretty full speed consecutively for 90 minutes straight, with really almost without even breaking a sweat. And like typically, like I'm skipping rope for like 5-10 minutes.
Wait, so you're using this for like a workout?
Yeah, it's more
like a pre-workout?
Not a pre-workout. It's more just like taking the governor off the brain, where it's like you start to realize the self-imposed barriers that we put on ourselves. And the LSD, for whatever reason, removes those limiting thoughts or patterns. So
you're like talking like maybe some dude who's a college basketball player, like taking this before a game.
Yeah.
No
way.
That's
where I'm really, that's where I'm really excited about is
more. I would have never thought in terms of like physical activity, LS. That's crazy. That's crazy.
So it's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one. Another one that we're really excited about. I won't be able to say too much about it yet, but think about like a more like a social dose. So like people that don't want to drink alcohol, like ourselves, but you still want to get a little loose or go dancing and just vibe out to music and stuff like that. So some sort of, it's an elixir type of product to really just bring the walls down, but you won't have the toxicity and you won't have the hangover the next day.
Wow.
And this is using a fungi, completely legal, of course. So yeah, that's something I'm excited about. As you know, we've helped people with mental health. Let's really focus on that. And then it's like, okay, once those people are feeling good and they want to let loose a little bit, now here's a healthy alternative instead of going back to alcohol or whatever.
Incredible. Yeah. And one more thing on the dialed product. You released that coinciding with a sort of protocol that you recommend too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
I think it's really important, right? You're not just like putting this out there and like, all right, have at it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's really important, man, because the protocol is really going to, it's really going to help the user bring them back to homeostasis, which is the whole thing. And what it does, this protocol, it's a three-week protocol. You could either take it in the morning, see how your state changes. For some people, that's the interesting thing about Amanita, is it works for people differently. So like you could take it in the morning and then you could start to feel like you're a little tired or lethargic. So then I would say, okay, if it's doing that, and that's not serving you, shift to take it in at nighttime, and vice versa. You could take it at nighttime and it starts to give you a little bit more energy. There's something to be said about that. It's really, it's unique to the user. However, after 3 weeks of taking it, whether it's morning or night, what it does is it resets your circadian rhythm. So now you're building more of a symbiotic connection to the sun, which is awesome.
Incredible. Yeah.
You know, like you want to go to bed earlier. When the sun goes down, you're getting tired. I could barely stay up at nighttime while on this thing. Like, I'm like, I wish I could. I can't. Like, I'm in bed so early. It's like embarrassingly early. Mm-hmm. But I'm up really early. I'm up before the sun. So it starts to connect you back to the sun, which is like kind of how we started this whole conversation, is like connecting more to nature. What's right. more about nature than the sun? The sun is the circadian rhythm of all life.
Totally.
And there's a lot of, you know, ancient religions that just literally worship the sun as God. And you could make easy connections on why they would do that. Bringer of all life, bringer of all light. So anyway, this protocol, really simple, 3-week protocol, resets your circadian rhythm. Once people have their circadian rhythm is aligned, what does that mean? You're connected to nature more than ever again.
Mm.
And then with that, now it starts to, if you continue the using it, it starts to show you things on a more soul revealing level. That's the psychedelic aspect of it. And then the really cool thing is, after about, you know, 60 days of use, like, you don't even really need it anymore. Like, it's not maybe not the best business model.
I appreciate that, though.
But it's true.
You could really easily be like, hey, you're going to have to just, you're going to be much better if you take this forever. But you're like, no, you really
you won't even need it. That's the thing. It's over. It's like, it's done its job. Used Amanita for what it was there for, to bring you back to nature and shift you more into the creative mind. And I believe that's what it's generalizing, but I believe that's what it's really about, is like, the creator is waiting for you to tap in with him, and he's really in the space, you know, and the mind just keeps going and going and going. And it's hard for people to find the space to tap in. And that's what, for me, this mushroom really helps, is like, it creates more space around your thoughts, and who's waiting there for you in that space, the creator.
Hmm. Man, I love that so much. Is there anything else you want to share about eons or anything else like that before we get into this next?
No, that was great. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. I want to revisit the time you spent as a pilot.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Just because I'm curious.
Yeah.
And this is actually rhetorical, because I know your answer, and that's why I want to ask it.
Sure.
Okay. Couple things, actually. Yeah. So first, as a pilot,
yeah,
the system you're training on, what is that system based on in terms of the Earth?
It's based on a flat Earth model.
Why is that?
Well, because a lot of things. The maps. You know, maps, whether people know this or not, are all based on a flat Earth model.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty interesting. All the instrumentation literally says it. If you could find it in the fine print of the POH, the Pilot Operating Handbook, all the way from, you know, small aircraft, all the way up to NASA, says this in their own manuals that I went to look up. And it's like, these instrumentation is designed for a flat Earth model. It says, like, yeah. Asterisk. Why would they say that? Pretty interesting, right?
Yep.
There's many things, as I'm sure you've probably covered, but it was just many things that.
But it's cool hearing it from the perspective of a pilot, though, too.
It's a right, because it's a different perspective. Once you have the bird's eye view of something, you're seeing it differently than most people. That's all I'm saying is. And I spent a lot of time, thousands of hours up in the sky, and I remember asking them, Alec, at a really young age. You know, I think it was like 18 or 19. Like, hey, when do I get to see the curvature?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how high do I need to go? And the instructor was like, oh, you see it at around 18,000 feet. That's what they told me back then. Like, mm-hmm. the math was at 18,000 feet, Pythagorean's theorem or whatever the thing was.
You just know they were telling you were going to see it.
They were going to tell me at 18,000 feet. Okay. My career developed. I got in, you know, bigger airplanes, got to fly higher, get to 18,000 feet. Hey, there's no curvature. It's kind of weird. I asked them, like, when do I see the curvature? And then these pilots are like, oh, no, you see it when you're in commercial jets, 25,000 feet and up. Okay, got to those. Boeing 737, you know, 25,000 feet flying. Hey, it's weird. Where's the curvature? Oh, it's only when you get into the private jets now. Okay, got into private jets. You know, I flew as high as 48,000 feet. I'm like, now I'm at 48,000 feet. I'm like 20,000 feet higher than a lot of commercial airliners.
Yeah.
A lot of planes are not going that high. I'm asking the pilots, like, hey, where's the curvature now? Oh, it's only when you're in these supersonic jets and like astronauts and stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know if my career is going to go that far, but it was really interesting just to hear. And then I would ask people, this is just matter of fact, I would ask people like, hey, have you seen it? No, I haven't seen it. It must be only when you're in the higher things, you know? So I would ask this to pilots all the time. So I don't know. All I'm saying is I haven't seen it. Yeah. I've spent thousands of hours up there. I don't really know what is the shape of it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I know it would be, you know, I don't know how people explain it, but for me, like, imagine landing a plane. This is what I always thought. Like, they're saying the earth is spinning at like thousands of miles an hour.
Yeah.
How would you land a plane on a moving target at a thousand miles an hour? And they say, well, the atmosphere is moving, so you're moving at the same time. I'm like, I don't see that.
No.
In with my own eyes. And like, okay, let's say you're flying around the curvature. Like, wouldn't eventually, by the time you get to Australia, you'd be like literally like flying upside down? Like, how does that work?
You never have to dip your nose or account for that.
Never had to dip the nose or anything like that. And like, even in a helicopter, I've flown helicopters too. Mm-hmm. Some pretty badass helicopters. And like, for me, I would think just, and you know, people can think whatever they want. But like, for me, I think I fly up straight in a helicopter. I should be able to see the spinning earth start to move underneath me, right? If I'm staying stationary, you never see that. Like, there's just a lot of things that bring a lot of curiosity.
You come right back down to the same spot, no matter how long you've been up there.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. Interestingly enough, a family member of mine who I'm really close with, I'm also not going to name names, had a jet at one point, which are really like not as expensive as you would think.
Yeah, you could do it really smartly.
You can. You can do it like much cheaper than you might think.
Mm-hmm.
But just by happenstance, they weren't seeking out specific pilots.
Mm-hmm.
Both of the pilots that flew that jet happened to be non-globe people. Let's put it that way. They're like, they said the same thing. They're like, I don't know what this is, but I've been flying private for a long time. I've been at varying altitudes and I've never seen any indication whatsoever. And they named all the exact same things you did.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And again, these weren't specifically chosen people. Like, people could make the argument, okay, you're a friend of mine. You're in the same type of mindset community. So you already have the presupposition. These were two random people that weren't flying commercial. Cause I could imagine, like, as a commercial pilot, you're working for some big name company and you have a lot of people who come up and ask you with like a flat earth t-shirt on, like, hey, is it curved? Like, you don't want to be the one that's caught on camera saying that shit.
Oh, for sure.
But in like private conversations, and I've had private conversations with these ones, they're like, yeah, dude, there's no curve whatsoever. I do not see any curve. And my tendency is to think that we live on a flat stationary plane. That's what they say.
Yeah. Makes sense, man. There's a lot of things. The one thing I will say, I brought this up to you too, but like, just look at this next time, people. Like, you could just see this with your own eyes. The curve is one thing, but like, one thing that never made any sense to me, I still don't exactly know what's going on. So I'm just out of curiosity, but it's like, if you look at how much they say like jet fuel goes into the wings of these airplanes, it's like ginormous amounts. Like, it's supposed to be like Olympic size swimming pool amounts of gallons, like 20, 30,000 gallons going. That's an Olympic size swimming pool.
Yeah.
Of fuel. That's what they say goes into the jet fuel for them to go from one destination to the other. And it's like, you look at the size of these wings, like they're less than a feet.
Yeah.
Like less than a foot wide. They're so thin. There's no way there's that much jet fuel going in there. So I'm like, I don't know. There's something really weird going on.
I wonder what that is. Yeah. I've looked at several videos and I'm like, I can't make sense of it. It just doesn't make sense either way. It just like, this does not make sense.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. That was probably such a curveball for people listening. Like,
they're like, what? That's all right.
I love it. My audience is here for it though. So it's all good. Okay. So if you are interested in Eons, please head to the show notes. I'll link all of what Alex sends me to link there in the show notes so you can go check them out. Man, thank you for being here. This was such an awesome conversation, dude. I was so stoked to talk about this because I have been using this myself and I've absolutely loved it. And that's why I texted you. I was like, I can't wait for this. I definitely want us to consume some before we have this talk. I think being in the experience, the field of that substance while talking about that substance honestly just makes it better because it's coming from an authentic place of experience. So this is amazing, man.
It was awesome, man. Had a lot of fun. Thank you. Thanks for having me and thanks for all the work that you're doing, Alec. You know, I love what you're up to in the world and just keep shining your light, brother.
Thank you, bro.
Thank you.